Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Ryan Dorfman again with you. USC meets fantasy sports. Let's get it right. Let's kick it off. March Madness, baby. March Madness, Dick Vitale. March Madness, baby. Here we go. Let's talk some March Madness. Holy moly. This tournament has been absolutely off the hook. It's been off the hook. Let's begin with this. Let's just start with Villanova and Wisconsin. Okay. These two teams, first of all, Villanova, I mean, just they came out and they played the 16 seed Mount St. Mary's. Okay. We all know that a 16 seed has never beaten a number one seed. They are number one seeds are now like 132-0 against 16 seeds. We know this. So the question here was, will the 16 seed make it close? And the answer was absolutely, positively not. But they did. Look, I'm not saying I was one of the people that said the 16 seed is never going to make it close. I mean, honestly, I thought that eventually a 16 seed will beat a 1 seed. I mean, look, I was talking to my friend about it, and we were just saying, hey, you know, it's obviously going to happen eventually, and all it really takes is for the 16 seed to basically play their best basketball they have during the year and for the 1 seed to have a horrible game. And the stars could align like that. Like, the stars could easily align like that, and you just never know when it's going to happen. So Villanova comes in, and they play St. Mary's. So let's take a trip to this game right here. Villanova comes in, they take a trip to St. Mary's, and I'm trying to get two tabs of them over here so I can get the game. So Villanova, yeah. Okay, so at halftime, it's 30-29. So usually in the past, when I've seen these top-seeded teams go against the lower-seeded teams and really struggle in the first round, it's a good indication that they're going to lose in the second round of the tournament. Because if you're up by 1 point against a 16 seed at halftime, clearly you're not playing your best basketball. Now, Villanova did come out in the second half and outscore Mount St. Mary's by 19 points, but the damage was done. I had already ingrained in my head that Villanova was capable of getting knocked out in the second round, and that's exactly what happened. Wisconsin, I had picked Wisconsin to beat Virginia Tech. No doubt about it, Wisconsin won that game 84-74. And let's look at this game between Wisconsin and Villanova that we just saw. Obviously, Villanova lost the game. They are the defending champions. Question, is Jay Wright on the chopping block now? You know, we saw him win a championship last year in dramatic fashion. And if we look at Jay Wright, look at his tenure with the Villanova Wildcats, let it first be known that they had a very bad matchup with Wisconsin. Now, granted, Wisconsin came in to this tournament not being able to shoot the three ball. This is a team that couldn't shoot the three all year. They lived or died by the three, and they were dying. And Bronson Koenig and Nigel Hayes were two guys that were on that team that beat Kentucky but lost to Duke that year when they had Sam Decker and Frank Kaminsky. But Hayes and Koenig were on that team. I think they were freshmen that year. And, boy, you know, they came back this year as seniors, and they've really done their school proud in the Sweet 16 now, and people were thinking that they might not even get past the first round. Like, they might not even get past the first round. So, I mean, if you look at his head coaching record, I mean, since he took over at Villanova, you know, it took him 4 years to get, first of all, to get to the tournament. 4 years. So once he did get to the tournament, he made the Sweet 16 in his first year, then he got to the Elite Eight, then he exited in the first round, Sweet 16, Final Four, second round, first round, then he didn't make the tournament, and then it was unbelievable. Then it was round of 32, second round, NCAA champion, second round. So if you look at his past 4 years, he's advanced to the second round 3 times, and he's won it all once. He's won 70% of his games. He's he's been unbelievable. Like, he's been just an enigma to deal with. I don't know. Look, Jay Wright is a very good coach. He'd be very successful at another program. You know, he'd be very, very successful in another program. And so I'm not really entirely sure if the correct answer here is to fire Jay Wright. You know, he's got a good pedigree. You know, he's made it to the Final Four. He knows what it takes to win games. But clearly, I mean, the whole thing was last year was the whole, oh, he's got a monkey off his back now because he proved that he can win the big one. And he did, you know. I feel bad for this Villanova team. Like, I really, really do. Chris Jenkins, I mean, came back to school, and he could have went in the NBA draft last year. He really, really could have. So I feel bad for Villanova, and I give all the credit to Wisconsin. All the credit to Wisconsin. So let's just move on and just talk about the actual game between Wisconsin and Villanova. Now, Wisconsin was up 4 at halftime, so obviously not a big margin there. Nigel Hayes was the guy for Wisconsin. He had 19 points, 8 rebounds. Koenig had 17, so those were the two guys. And you look at Villanova, and Chris Jenkins struggled heavily from the field, going 2 of 9 with only 6 points. Josh Hart played really well, but this was just a team that – they really struggled from the field. Chris Jenkins just really hurt them. He really did. They struggled to make their threes. I mean, Wisconsin outshot them from three. They didn't, you know, their free throw percentage was probably what kept them in the game, to be completely honest with you. But they allowed players on Wisconsin to get 8 rebounds. I mean, they allowed Wisconsin to pull down 12 offensive rebounds. Five of 8 rebounds from Nigel Hayes were offensive rebounds. They were not passing the ball. They only had 5 assists on 21 shots. And the Wisconsin Badgers had 10 assists. So basically they spread the ball around a lot better. Villanova didn't turn the ball over, but it's just, you know, when you don't come in shooting the basketball, you can't win these games. And you have to come in under – you need your star players to show up. And Chris Jenkins couldn't do that. Like, he honestly could not do that. It's a shame, you know. So if I am Villanova and I have a decision clearly to make, I'm going to keep Jay Wright. I'm going to keep Jay Wright, and because, to be honest, like, I just don't think there's anyone out there right now that can be better than him. He's a very good coach. He's not elite like guys like Coach K and Roy Williams are, or Phil Self and John Calipari. He's not in that class, but he's definitely a notch below that, and that's still a very good coach. You know, him, Shaka Smart, like, that's the group that he's in. And by the way, watch out for the Texas Longhorns next year. They'll be good. Shaka Smart was his first year with VCU, the first years of VCU, and he's turning the Texas Longhorns team back into the team that they were when they had guys like D.J. Augustine and Kevin Durant, of course. You honestly have no idea. Like, you have no idea how good Jay Wright is because he doesn't get enough credit. You have no idea. Let's move on. And because we just started talking about Wisconsin and Villanova, but they are playing the Florida Gators. They are going to be playing the Florida Gators, and that should be a good game. You know, I'll tell you this. So, basically, I am obviously no mistake that I'm still in school. I'm still in college. And in my one of my classes, basically our professor was going to have us do a bracket, have all of us do a bracket where we all filled out a bracket and the winner got like a $10 gift card to Starbucks. You know, what is he going to give us, right? So all of a sudden, I'm like, I'll take it. I'm doing it more for the pride. I don't even really drink coffee. So instead, what he had us do was he scrapped the whole bracket thing and we basically went around. He had a hat. And he put numbers into a hat, 14 numbers, 14 of us in the class. We each picked a number. I got number 14. So 13 people had to go before me, and each person would pick a national champion, and you cannot repeat champions. So it got to me, and I had the Gators winning it all. If the Gators win this game, they would play the winner of Baylor, South Carolina, and I 100% would wholeheartedly believe that the winner of this Wisconsin versus Florida game will beat the winner of the Baylor, South Carolina game. So I'm picking Wisconsin. I'm picking the Gators to beat Wisconsin. I'm picking Baylor to beat South Carolina, and I'm picking the Gators to beat Baylor and get to the Final Four. I really liked the Gators team. They lost one of their best players, one of their best shot blockers on defense, and that really hurt them. But this is still a very good team. You saw what they did to Virginia, winning by 26 points. This is a very dangerous Gators team. And to be honest with you, if they run into a team like West Virginia in the Final Four or a team like, Arizona, I think the Gators could win. You know, I don't want them playing Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga would beat them just because Gonzaga is so deep and the Gators do have an injury. The thing is, when it comes to the Florida Gators, this is a very good team. This is a very solid squad. I want to briefly stop with March Madness and briefly talk about this Conor McGregor business that we got going on right now. And I've seen boxing experts say that he saw Conor training through Floyd, and he said he doesn't think that it doesn't look like Conor could box a lick. Something about Max Kellerman said that he couldn't land a single punch. Like, all of this is so stupid. I mean, basically, shut up and fight. I mean, that's exactly what these guys need to do, is stop talking, start fighting. I want to see it. Everyone wants to see it. I've heard June 10th being thrown out as a date. So we'll see what happens. Connor said it's very close to getting done. I hope it gets done, very soon. And, of course, I'm going to roll with my boy Connor if a fight happens. Let's go back to March Madness, because that's what's going on right now. Virginia, the Cavaliers, they almost lost the 5-12 to UNC Wilmington. I had Wilmington in that game. Virginia, they were down early, but they came back into the game thanks to London Perantis, but they got absolutely demolished by the Gators. Now let's look at that Gators game against Virginia, because they won that game by 26 points, okay? They just beat the number one defensive team in the country by 26 points. And the Gators had the better D. They only allowed 17 first half points to Virginia. Now, you just look at this box score, and you'll see that they held London Perantis 2 of 12 shooting. So you want to talk about defense, the Gators. They held Jerome. They held Jerome to 0 of 4 shooting, 0 points for the guy, Ty Jerome. 0 points for Kyle Guy. He went 0 of 4 shooting. And then Muriel Shayok went 2 of 9. They absolutely thwarted this Virginia team. Like, 100% wholeheartedly thwarted them. They absolutely annihilated them. And you look and you can see why. 14 points for Justin Leon. 14 points for Devin Robinson. 14 and 11, by the way, for Devin Robinson. 14 and 10 for Leon. They absolutely crushed the Virginia Cavaliers in so many categories. You look and you see, obviously, shooting. They stopped them in every single way possible. Virginia went 1 of 15 from the 3-point line. 1 of 15. When the Princes went 0 of 4. The Gators went 8 of 21. They've got guys who can hit threes. Leon is one of them, and Robinson can hit them, but Leon is a big guy. They didn't do great from the free throw line, and they didn't have that much of a rebounding margin because Jack Salt of Virginia did have 10 boards, and Mamadi Diakite had 6 boards and 5 from Ty Jerome. So they only out-rebounded Virginia by 2, but they passed the ball well. They did not really turn the ball over. They forced more turnovers than Virginia did. And Virginia got into foul trouble.
Virginia got into a lot of foul trouble. Devin Hall was in foul trouble the whole game. He finished with 0 points. He was a starter, played 18 minutes, 0 points. Ty Jerome, 17 minutes, 0 points. Kyle Guy, 17 minutes, 0 points. That's a lot of playing time. These guys literally combined when an O of 11 combined. That's just unacceptable. Like, wholeheartedly, 100%, no doubt about it, unacceptable for that to happen. So Virginia really played poorly, and it wasn't just that. The Gators played really well, and so that's why I'm on board for the Gators to possibly get to the Final Four. Now let's move on to the other side of the bracket, and we got the other side of the region. SMU losing to USC. This was a game that I didn't see happening. Some people had SMU going really far. But USC pulling off the upset somehow. I mean, ASU beat USC, and ASU's horrible. I'll say that. I go to ASU. I don't care. Why did USC beat SMU? They absolutely shot better. Elijah Stewart, really good game, 22 points, 8 of 15 from the field. And you also look at Benny Boatwright, 14 points from the field, 14 points on 6 of 10 shooting. So they played well. They outshot SMU. They made just as many threes They made fewer threes. But the key here was the rebounding. And they had Chumezi Metu to thank for that. And their assist numbers were really impressive. I told you know Jordan McLaughlin had 5 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists. Really balanced game. Metu had 14 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. So these guys, you know, they really passed the ball around really well. They didn't really force many turnovers. SMU wasn't in foul trouble. It was a very good game. It went down to the final wire. And you look what happened in the second half, and SMU just absolutely collapsed. They were up by 8 at halftime. And I remember it was like 62-60, 2.5 minutes left, and Boatwright hit the clutch 3, and then Shake Milton made it 65-63 with 1:33 left. But then Elijah Stewart, bang, another 3. And so they just couldn't capitalize. I mean, USC was in the threes. And then USC obviously lost to Baylor last night by 4 points. USC put up a good fight. I was really impressed by USC. So let's look at Baylor. They easily got by New Mexico State. So let's look at this Baylor game. And so we can just figure out exactly what it is that Baylor is going to bring to the court, because they're playing a South Carolina team. And I really believe that Baylor will win the game. You know, they won 82-78 against USC. It's just this, look, Baylor is a team that it's tough. Like, they've been upset like every year. And with Gulf Coast and Georgia State, and they actually finally made it to the tournament. I mean, sorry, to not just tournament. They actually finally made it like past the first round this year. And gotta give props to them. Look at this game against USC. USC shot better than they did. They made more threes than Baylor did. They shot better from the three-throw line than Baylor did. But what Baylor capitalized on was Donovan Motley, 19 points, 10 rebounds, 6 of which were offensive rebounds. They absolutely murdered USC on the boards. And that was just really the key to winning for them. So you see North Carolina, too. Like, they're the same way. They absolutely love to dominate those boards and dominate the paint. So the reason Baylor won is the rebounding. So the question is, can Baylor rebound against South Carolina? So what do you do? Well, first of all, I see we're picking Marquette to beat South Carolina in the first round, but South Carolina beat them by 20. And Marquette was one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, lost by 20 points. Very impressive by South Carolina. Then South Carolina goes in and beat Duke last night, which shocked the world. I was not expecting that whatsoever. So you look and see, could South Carolina battle on the boards? So you look at South Carolina, and they had definitely some guys that could rebound against Baylor. Mainly, Chris Silva had 17 points and 10 rebounds, five of which were offensive rebounds. Six rebounds for Sandarius Thornwell. They had three guys with four rebounds. So they could rebound the ball. They got some big guys there. You know, what led to South Carolina beating Duke? It wasn't the shooting. You know, Duke actually shot better than South Carolina did. What it really came down to was the passing of South Carolina. Sandarius Thornwell was very, very good. 24 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Duke turned the ball over way too much. Jason Tatum, as good as he is, he had 15 points, but he had 5 turnovers. Frank Jackson, not impressive at all. Also another 5 turnovers, but he did have 15 points. So that's not – you can't turn the ball over 5 times. They turned the ball over 18 times yesterday. 18 times. If you turn the ball over 18 times, you're not going to win games. I'm sorry. Not in the NCAA tournament. Not in the NCAA tournament. So basically, Duke lost, and that busted a lot of people's brackets. South Carolina could contend with Baylor, but I feel like Baylor is going to pull this out. I feel like Baylor's going to pull it out, so we're going to see a matchup between Florida and Baylor, and I got Florida winning this game. Now, let's move on into the other regions of this bracket. Gonzaga also really struggled in the first round against South Dakota State for a while. Very similar to the way that Villanova struggled. Gonzaga was only up by 4 points at halftime. Big red flag there. Big red flag. They went on and beat Northwestern, and I think if they had played Vanderbilt, they probably would have lost, but they beat Northwestern. Now, the Northwestern-Vanderbilt game was absolutely nuts because at the end of the game, Vanderbilt was up by 1 point, and there wasn't much time left on the clock, and Vanderbilt's best player, arguably their best player, Matthew Fisher Davis, committed a very dumb foul. He clearly thought that they were either losing the game or that they had a foul to give. And so he fouled them, sent them to the line, and the rest is history. Vanderbilt is just absolutely unbelievable because just the grit that they played with in that game was really impressive to me, and I really thought that they were going to beat Gonzaga, but it just didn't happen because they lost Northwestern on a stupid foul. So Northwestern shouldn't have even been in the game, so Gonzaga got lucky. But now Gonzaga runs into a very talented West Virginia team that just beat Notre Dame. In West Virginia, obviously, you know they like to press. They love to press, and it's going to be interesting to see whether Gonzaga can handle that. Gonzaga versus West Virginia. I mean, I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I'm gonna say that West Virginia pulls off the upset and beats Gonzaga. So look at this game with West Virginia and Notre Dame, because West Virginia won the game 81-73 against Mike Bray and the Fighting Irish. Basically, the difference here was clearly, I mean, West Virginia forced 14 turnovers, and it was clear that Matt Farrell of Notre Dame really struggled. He turned the ball over 4 times. Notre Dame really struggled. West Virginia actually shot the ball rather well. They're not known as an offensive team, but Javon Carter really shot the lights out of the ball.
Their free throw shooting left a little bit to be desired. Notre Dame didn't miss a single free throw that game, and Notre Dame lost. So obviously, look, the key again was the phenomenal shooting by Javon Carter, the above average shooting by Daxter Miles Jr. They out rebounded them 34-28. Issa Ahmad from West Virginia was the star rebounder, and Nathan Adrian had 5 rebounds as well. So that really helped them. Nathan Adrian also getting it done, passing the ball as well. That helps West Virginia. They can pass the ball. They didn't turn the ball over very much. They forced turnovers, and they stayed out of foul trouble for the most part. I genuinely believe that this team could beat Gonzaga. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind about it. Xavier and FSU was a crazy game. Xavier destroyed the 11 seed by 25, 26 points. I don't think anyone was expecting that to happen, at least not by that margin. Go back to this game, all the talk that's about Florida State. They had Dwayne Bacon and Jonathan Isaac. The game wasn't even close. Xavier is one of the worst teams coming into the tournament because they really underperformed this season. They were supposed to be like a 3 seed projected in the preseason, and they came in as an 11 seed. So I didn't expect much from them. I had them beating Maryland, but I didn't expect much from from Xavier. And the key to Xavier's win was their red hot shooting off the bat. And it started with Trevon Blewett. 29 points. Tyreek Jones shot really, really well. Kaiser Gates, really, really well. They shot the lights out, and Florida State just couldn't make enough shots. They just couldn't make enough shots. They were on fire. Xavier was on fire from three. Gates was really, really impressive. Blewett was really, really impressive. When it came to the free throw line, even shooting the free throws, I mean, Sean Amara went 7-for-7 from the line. Blewett went 10-for-14. They didn't rebound as well as they could have, but they did out-rebound Florida State. Blewett had 5 rebounds. He also had 6 assists. Malcolm Bernard had 5 assists. Gates had 5 assists. Amara had 5 rebounds. Those are all rebounds I'm talking about. The assists were from Gooden, Quinton Gooden, and JP McCora. So they passed the ball really, really well. They literally had the perfect game. They stayed out of foul trouble. Everything went well for Xavier. So Xavier is really hot right now. So Arizona needs to watch out. Arizona needs to watch out for Xavier. Arizona beat St. Mary's in what was a very good game. It was 69-60. I think I had Arizona winning the game, but I was like, hey, I could see St. Mary's winning this game. And Arizona, to be completely honest with you, was a very, very good team. I even know how I hate them. And the key to their victory they were getting fouls constantly. I mean, Markkanen was great, and Trier also very, very good. They out-rebounded St. Mary's. They didn't turn the ball over. They forced some turnovers. They really gave trouble to Jock Wagondale, and they stayed out of foul trouble. There was a lot of foul trouble for St. Mary's. Calvin Hermanson was in foul trouble for a while. Dane Pinot was in foul trouble for a while. So they really capitalized. Arizona played a very good game. They're going to run into a red-hot Xavier team. So if I were Arizona, I would not take this game lightly, like at all. I would absolutely tread lightly. Kansas
easily dispatched at 16 seed Miami. Very surprising loss to Michigan State, and then Kansas dispatched Michigan State. Kansas has been looking terrific, making me eat my words. I said they'd lose in the second round, but they didn't, and now they're running into Purdue. Now, Purdue surprisingly beat Vermont, a team that hadn't lost since, like, early December, and I was very upset about that. And I thought Purdue was going to lose to Iowa State, and this is the pick that really busted my bracket the most, besides Villanova, was this Iowa State game, where Iowa State lost by 4 to Purdue in what was a terrific game. And you have to just look here, and you have to understand that the reason that Iowa State lost this game was because of the rebounding. Caleb Swanigan, 20 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists. He was such a beast. 21-10 for Vince Edwards for Purdue. Like, they just destroyed him, destroyed Iowa State on the boards. And they just couldn't handle it. I mean, Iowa State shot better than Purdue did, but again, it came down to that rebounding and assists. I mean, Dakota Mathias, he was really impressive passing the ball as well. Swanigan getting 20-12-7 as a power forward, he just increased his draft stock a lot. I was really upset Iowa State lost. Purdue-Kansas is going to be a very good game. One of Kansas's biggest issues clearly has been rebounding on the defensive glass. So if you bring in a team like Purdue that can get second chance opportunities and rebound the ball, Kansas gets in trouble. I'm going to say that Purdue beats Kansas and gets to the Elite Eight. I'm not buying Kansas. I'm not buying them. I'm not buying into the hype that Kansas is. Basically, Iowa State messed up, and I'm pretty upset by it again. So this is going to be an interesting matchup. Kansas-Purdue should be a very good game. You got Oregon. I thought they were going to lose to Iona. I know. How could I ever think that? But I had Iona winning the game. Creighton versus Rhode Island. I had Rhode Island winning. I had Rhode Island beating Oregon. Now let's go back to that Rhode Island versus Oregon game, because Rhode Island was winning for most of the game last night. Rhode Island was winning for most of the game last night, and Oregon pulled it out. Oregon pulled it out. They rallied late. Rhode Island was up by 8 points at halftime. Why did Oregon win the game? I'm pointing primarily to the fact that they were able to draw fouls, that Tyler Dorsey was able to get to the line. I'm pointing to the fact that he had 15 offensive rebounds to Rhode Island's just 9. Jordan Bell played very well from an honest perspective. He had 6 points, but he did have 12 rebounds. Dylan Brooks, 19-7, 27 points from Dorsey. He really was the star. That rebounding margin was crazy, and that's why they won. And crashing the glass, creating second chance opportunities, and staying out of foul trouble really helps. So there you go. That's the key to winning games in the tournament. Hit your shots, rebound the ball, stay out of foul trouble. Michigan. I had Michigan going to the Elite Eight, actually. So the fact that they beat the Oklahoma State game was probably one of the best tournament games I have ever seen. It was absolutely sick. It was absolutely phenomenal. Like, I was like in awe watching that game. So hats off to Michigan for being the number one offensive team in the country. Louisville obviously beat Jacksonville State, and then Michigan beat Louisville. Now, going back to that Michigan-Louisville game, I really believe that, I know it's going to sound silly, but there was an incident where the Michigan team's plane skidded off the runway, and I really believe that that has elevated their play, that they now are a much more humble group of guys, and it really brought them together, and Derek Walton Jr. is for real. He's the real deal. Morris Wagner was very impressive. DJ Wilson was very impressive. Zach Irvin played well. That whole team played well. They were down, you know, at halftime by 8, and they shot the hell out of the ball. Wagner was terrific. Wilson really shot it well. They couldn't hit many threes, but neither could Louisville. They shot the ball well from the free throw line. They did not really win the rebounding battle at all. But the key was to, I mean, honestly, it would, they say that a foul trouble, and they were very efficient with their shooting, very efficient, and they play hard. They play hard. They're not scared. They're not going to be scared against Oregon. They're going to come into this game, and they're going to take it to Oregon, and I think Oregon's going to lose. I've got Purdue, and I've got Michigan in the Elite Eight. So let's move on now to the final region of the bracket, the North Carolina region. Now, I'm not sure if you guys watched the game yesterday, but North Carolina had quite the scare. I thought they might lose for a minute. And they pulled it out. Here's the issue with North Carolina last night was that they just were not able to really shoot the ball as well as they could have. Isaiah Hicks struggled. Theo Pinson also struggled from the field. Justin Jackson, he was okay. Joel Berry had a nightmare game, and he went 2 of 13 from the field, 2 of 8 from 3. It was just a nightmare for these guys. They couldn't hit their threes. Thank God they were able to hit their free throws. And again, it was just the rebounding is where UNC just annihilates people. 11 rebounds for Kennedy Meeks, 7 for Isaiah Hicks, 8 from Justin Jackson. Assists, they were able to pass the ball well, Justin Jackson. They turned it over 17 times, but they forced 19 turnovers in return. And they definitely stayed out of foul trouble. So UNC needs to bring their A game against Butler. Butler is a good squad, a good team. We've seen them do things in a tournament before, but that was when they had Gordon Hayward and Brad Stevens. But this is still, you know, a solid Butler team that needs to be taken seriously. So that'll be a good game. I've got UNC winning in this game. It should be a very good game. They're very competitive. I think it goes down to the wire. Cincinnati and Kansas State. Let's visit Butler real quick and figure out what Butler does well, because they're not really a Power Five team for all intents and purposes. They're not really a Power Five team for all intents and purposes. But Butler is a good squad. You know, they beat Villanova like twice this year. That kind of doesn't say as much now that Villanova lost in the second round, but they were the defending champions, and I will give them a lot of respect for beating Villanova twice. Now, Butler shot the ball rather well. You know, Andrew Charbaz played really well for Butler, and so did Keegan Martin coming off the bench with 19 points. They were able to make some threes. You know, Martin is a good three-point shooter. They shot well from the line. They rebounded the ball rather well. It was the same exact rebounding numbers from Middle Tennessee, but Middle Tennessee actually probably rebounded it better because, you know, they had more offensive rebounds, created more second-chance opportunities. They passed the ball around pretty well. They didn't turn the ball over. They stayed out of foul trouble for the most part. Butler's going to be their balanced team. If UNC just plays UNC basketball, plays Tar Heel basketball, they can win the game. UCLA, obviously, coming off a win against Cincinnati last night. They won 79-67. Cincinnati's a good squad, but UCLA is just better. When you look at Lonzo Ball, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 7 rebounds, 9 assists. Great game from Lonzo. Their starting five reached double digits. That was very good, very balanced by UCLA. Obviously one of the best offensive teams in the country. So shooting is never an issue for them. It's all about defense. and they rebounded. They didn't rebound as well as they could have, but they definitely did a solid job limiting the shooting of Cincinnati. And Cincinnati is not really a very good shooting team in the first place, so that was a very good matchup for UCLA to win that game. So hats off to them. Hats off to UCLA. UCLA heads and plays Kentucky next. So to be honest with you, Kentucky is going to lose. They only won by 9 points against the number 15 seeded Northern Kentucky. That was the closest margin of all one and two seeds in the first round. They looked really bad against Northern Kentucky. They almost lost to Wichita State. I really thought they were going to. And you look at this game with Kentucky, and they're very inexperienced. You know, Kentucky's always going to be a very young team. But this is, don't make no mistake, this is not the same team that had a cat on it, or it's not the team that had John Wall or Anthony Davis. Like, you know, Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox is good, but this is not the same team. And it clearly showed. They shot the ball really well, which was good for Kentucky. But their issue, really, it came down to just not being exactly as efficient as they could be, especially on the offensive boards. They got eaten up on the offensive boards against Wichita State. And they got out-rebounded, and they need to spread the ball around a little better. They did a good job taking care of the ball, good job not staying out of foul trouble. But UCLA is just too good. They're too talented. And it's kind of like a revenge game. This is going to be a revenge game, actually, because these two teams played earlier this year. But I got UCLA winning this game. So when you look at this, and let's look at my proposed Elite Eight. So my Elite Eight is going to be the Florida Gators, the Baylor Bears. From the West region, I've got West Virginia, and I've got Arizona. From the Midwest, I've got Purdue and Michigan. And from the South, I've got Carolina and UCLA. And if I had to pick between the Gators and Baylor, I'm going to go with the Gators, making it to the Final Four. I'm going to say that the Arizona Arizona wins and gets to the Final Four. I'm going to go with Michigan over Purdue. And I'm going to go with Carolina over UCLA because I think Carolina is much more balanced. In the Final Four, I'm going to say that Arizona beats the Gators and gets to the national championship game. And I'm going to say that Carolina beats Michigan. And I think we're going to see a UNC versus U of A game in the championship. And I think that UNC had a bad taste in their mouth. That's what happened last year, and they take care of U of A and beat them. So I got UNC winning it all. But right now, hey, place your bets because you know U of A is a good team. But I really believe that whoever comes out of that South region, whether it be North Carolina, whether it be UCLA, or whether it be Kentucky, wins this tournament, like literally wins this tournament. So basically, I'm just very excited to see what the rest of this tournament brings. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here. We've probably seen a lot of upsets. Two top seeds are gone. I think we're going to see another one lose. It's going to be interesting, guys. So I'm ready. I hope you guys are ready. Just they do second chance. They do second chance tournament brackets. And I'm actually going to fill mine out right now. So with you guys. And I'm actually, now that I think about it, I'm actually going to make some changes to the picks I just made. I'm a big stats guy. And so basically I'm going to pick I'm going to go here. I'm going to see where my second chance bracket is. If I can find it. We'll fill it out together right now. Fill it out with you guys. It's live right here. And so here we go. I'm going to pick really what I'm going to look to do is pick two upsets in the Sweet 16. And in those upsets, one of them is Michigan, and the other one I'm going to do is Purdue. So I'm going to pick Florida. I'm going to pick Baylor. I'm going to pick Gonzaga. I'm going to pick Arizona. I'm going to pick Purdue, Michigan. I'm going to pick UNC and UCLA. So basically, I'm going to go with Gonzaga over West Virginia. My Elite Eight is now Florida, Baylor, Gonzaga, Arizona, UNC, UCLA, and Purdue and Michigan. And in the Elite Eight, I'm gonna pick two upsets. So I'm gonna go with man, this is tough. It's not easy for me to do. Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, you know what? I'm gonna go with three upsets. I'm going with Michigan, UNC, and Arizona. Going upsets in the Florida too, right? So Florida too. I guess 1, 2, 3 upsets. Yeah, 3 upsets. And then in the final four, I'm just gonna go with Arizona and UNC, and I got UNC winning. This is gonna be interesting, guys. You know, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens here. Let's talk a little bit about fantasy baseball, which is coming up. And we've only got not too much time left, but we've got enough time to talk some fantasy baseball and talk some stuff about the Arizona Diamondbacks. So I really would like to do that while I have the chance. Now, the Arizona Diamondbacks are a mess right now, to say the least. What I'm really looking here, I mean, the Diamondbacks are, I mean, you got Paul Goldschmidt and you got Jake Lamb, you got A.J. Pollock, but just Brandon Drury just is not somebody I'm really buying. Yasmani Tomas, whoever plays catcher. This team is, like, if you just surround these guys with some solid pieces, you know, they could be good. You know, just the only thing is that they can really only be taken to that next level with just, they don't have any resources, you know? So I don't know if you really want to rely on a few players, but I'd like them to be a deeper team. If someone gets injured, this team is in huge trouble, like huge, huge trouble if someone gets injured. Basically, last year, the bullpen was, the entire rotation was horrible. I mean, Granke was not as good as he always is. Robbie Ray, his metrics were good, but his actual performance wasn't. And Shelby Miller was absolutely a disaster. I think that every single guy in that rotation needs to step up their game. I don't see how they could do any worse, to be honest with you. They don't really have a solid guy coming out of the bullpen. I mean, basically Andrew Chapman and Silvino Brancho basically are the two top rated closers according to like Fangraphs. Projections, but neither of them apparently is, you know, gonna get a lot of appearances. They got some talent, on the bench or, you know, for prospects. And it's funny because they've kind of depleted so much. Nick Ahmed, he played short for a little bit last year. They got Ketel Marte, Dowell Lugo and Odomaro Vargas come off the bench. Pitching prospects, they got Anthony Banda, who's pretty promising. And he
could be major league starter, you know, immediately for all we know. So this is a interesting squad, to say the least. Some of these like projections they're projecting Paul Goldschmidt to be like Jeff Bagwell, which is good. That's really cool. So I guess we'll see what happens with this team. Opening day is coming up soon, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens. The pitching really needs some help. I'm telling you right now, I really like Robbie Ray. I really do. Like, I think he's good. I think Archie Bradley could be good too if he just hit that. If he just hit his groove, but Robbie Ray is a guy that I'm really, really liking this year. I'm really gonna draft Robbie Ray this year on my fantasy team. I suggest you guys do the same. Another guy I'm looking at is Jameson Taillon from the Pirates. There's this interesting stat page in ESPN, and he's walked just over 4% of the batters he faced last year, which was like the eighth best rate by any rookie who pitched at least 100 innings since 1969, and the 14th best since 1901. He basically had a walk rate lower than 5%, strikeout rate higher than 20%, a ground ball rate greater than 50%, 100 innings. I mean, that's, and as a rookie, that's really impressive. So I really admire that. I think he's really good. Giancarlo Stanton is an interesting enigma because he gets hurt all the time. I don't know what to do. He's missed 23% of the Marlins game since he made his debut in 2010. That's really high. I don't want any part of him, to be honest with you. He's so good, but he was just – I'm sorry. I had him last year. He screwed me. He screwed me the last 2 years, to be honest. I'm not taking him this year. Someone else can have him. But watch him actually perform well this year. But if he doesn't, then I'm like, hey, you know, I focus up. Last year, Trevor Story hit 27 home runs. That's the new NL rookie record for a shortstop. And his 6.5% home run rate was sixth best all time among rookies at any position. So keep that in mind. Trevor Story is really, really good. Get this, right? Kyle Seager is a really good player as well. I know my friend Jeremy Schnell really likes him a lot. He's a Mariners fan. Only two guys have managed at least 20 homers and 80% contact rate in each of the past 5 years, and that's been Big Poppy, Ortiz, and Seager. Seager, only one of only eight players and one of only two third basemen with at least 25 doubles and 25 homers in each of the three seasons. Basically, all these stats, by the way, I want to credit to Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN. He puts out a phenomenal article every year in regards to this stuff. Matthew Berry does the same thing in fantasy football. So thank you, Tristan Cockcroft, for the great stats here that I'm able to share with you guys in case you haven't seen this, seen these tidbits yet. I want to say that here are the players that scored fewer fantasy points than Carlos Santana last year. Okay, Charlie Blackmon, Manny Machado, Gene Segura, Freddie Freeman, Xander Bogaerts, Will Myers, Nelson Cruz, Francisco Lindor. Every one of them finished at least 50. Those are the following players that scored fewer fantasy points than him. But every one of them finished at least 50 spots better than Santana on the Roto player rater. So that's interesting. Keep that in mind. Santana, while he's good in fantasy, he's not exactly the best in real life. By the way, Miguel Sano, his 297 strikeouts are the most in history by any player in his first 196 career big league games. So if you're looking for someone with average, don't pick him up. Gary Sanchez is a beast. We already know about Gary Sanchez. Addison Russell is a really good young guy. Don't pick up Eddie Rosario because in his two big league seasons, including his age 24 campaign in 2016, Eddie Rosario has a .13 walk-to-strikeout ratio and the only players in the modern era since 1901 to have a worse such ratio due to their age 24 seasons.
are Hernan Perez and two other guys you probably don't know. So don't pick up Eddie Rosario. Eddie Rosario is, I believe, he's an outfielder for the Twins, and I'm going to confirm that, and he is an outfielder for the Twins. He hit 270 last year, 10 home runs, 30 RBIs, 295 OBP. Not really feeling him too much. Of the 35 pitchers with at least 250 career saves, Fernando Rodney, 3.69 ERA, is the third highest. And speaking of shaky ratio closers, K-Rod, 3.79 fifth in the past three seasons combined, third highest among currently projected closers behind just Fernando Rodney and Gianmar Gomez. David Robertson, his 31.8% career strikeout rate is second best in baseball's history among pitchers with at least 500 innings pitched, trailing only Billy Wagner. Basically, Tanner Roark, okay, let me tell you something right now. Tanner Roark had a ERA last year of a 2.83, and people are picking him up. But don't do it, because among 73 ERA qualifiers last year, only Max Scherzer and John Lester face easier schedules than Tanner Roark using Baseball Prospectus's pitcher's quality of opponents measure. He also, that's all you need to say about that. Don't pick up Tanner Roark, because he got lucky last year. Robbie Ray, listen to this. I was talking about him. His 1.14 differential between his ERA and his FIP last season was the widest among qualified pitchers. Beast. All right. The one explanation is that he's afforded a bat. Okay. Look, the point is that Robbie Ray should be picked up this year and drafted, because he's going to be very, very good. I'm really buying into Robbie Ray's stock. Talking about how Hanley Ramirez's home run total has increased, but Hanley Ramirez is at the end of his career, to be honest. Draft Jose Quintana. He's really good. Don't draft Yasiel Puig. He's not. Pineda is interesting, but he's very inconsistent. James Paxton is a good prospect you might want to look at. Rougned Odor, it should be very good this year. I'm really buying into Rougned Odor. Hector Neris should be a very good relief pitcher if given the chance. Joe Musgrove is on that list too. He could be very good. Keon Broxton is one of the players that I am definitely trying to target this year in fantasy baseball. I really like him. Moncada is sick. Now, he's going to be really good, but there's a learning curve with these guys. I'm telling you right now. I mean, it's not – I really don't believe we're going to see the next Mike Trout or the next Andrew McCutchen or whatever. I mean, these guys like Chris Bryant and Bryce Harper and Mike Trout, I mean, they only come along they don't come along often is what I'm trying to say. So don't go all in on Yoan Moncada. Don't just expect everything. Just have tempered – expectations for him. He's good, but he's not at a superstar level yet. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Yoan Moncada can do, though. Andrew Miller I love, but you know, they would just need to use him like they did in the playoffs. Nothing's gonna happen. Lance McCullers, another guy that I love. Target him in draft. Michael Conforto, target him in draft. I really like Conforto. There's some other guys on my list that I have here for you. And that is Carter Capps and Blake Treinen. But the guys I'm really targeting are Keon Broxton, Robbie Ray, Lance McCullers, and Michael Conforto. Those four guys, slide them into a bench spot or utility spot, whatever you got to do. You should draft one of those four players. Again, Keon Broxton, Lance McCullers, Robbie Ray, and Michael Conforto. If possible, you can go after Carter Capps and Blake Treinen. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I know it's a little belated. It's my birthday tomorrow, so I'll be in a good mood. Thank you for listening once again. This has been UFC Meets Fantasy Sports. Catch me same time next week, Monday at 1 o'clock. Thanks, guys, for listening. Catch you later.